Please take a seat. Well, good morning. I'm going to assume that this isn't the first time you're in church. You've been, you know, hanging around churches for a long time. Some of you maybe Sunday school or something a long time ago. So Christmas is not a new thing. Story's not a new thing. The story we heard today from Luke's gospel is really a shepherd's story. And when people preach from that, they usually note that, as one scholar put it, Luke has a way of where the unlovely always turn up. The shepherds, these, well, sort of first century bogans, to use some New Zealand language, scruffy individuals who were parked out on the hills with the sheep, and a bit smelly, best kept away from town, or at least stand upwind from them. That's usually the sort of story. And the wonder that they were the ones the angels appeared to, and the ones among the first to see the newborn king. But those are sort of the incidentals, and that's the stuff of the nativity scene there. What's on my heart to share this morning is something very simple that I want to leave with you to take away. The incarnation, God coming to us, is such a wonder. You know, a question that's sometimes asked, and I don't know if you've asked this yourself, is why does anything exist? It could keep you awake at night. Why does anything exist? Why is there stuff? Why is there existence? And it takes us into the heart of creation. There is existence. There is being. Because one brings being into existence, God. It's no assumption that, you know, there's going to be a universe and there's stuff, and let alone life. God created, and it was good. And then it all went south. Genesis chapter 3. And we don't lack illustration of that today. Creation made good, but not what it was intended to be. And the heart of the Creator is full of love for his creation and the friends who he placed in that creation. It's full of love. I'm sure we've all been in situations where we've been responsible for something and we've seen it become a train wreck. You watch it happening. Oh no, no, don't do that. Don't, no, I'll do better. Now it's a mess. What do I do now? Well, you've got two options. One is to write it off as bad experience. We'll start again, shall we? And the other is to commit yourself more fully to the situation. The story of Noah and the flood sort of deals with this. God's response to his messed up, munted creation was to commit himself more fully. Some people think God sort of wound up the clock and let it go. That idea has been around for about 300 years. It was a great song, or a song that people always wanted at funerals I took in the 90s. From a distance, God is watching us. It's that sort of idea. But the Christmas story is this. No, God didn't write it off and say, well, we'll scrap that effort. That was creation 1.0. Let's try creation 2.0. Didn't do that. He decided, or rather his heart led him, to invest more and more. And the incarnation is God, the one above, beyond, around, under all that is, saying, I want to rescue it, I want to redeem it, and I'm going to do it by stepping in. Now, Mavis, I want to ask you a question. Put it like this. The mice, it's all gone bad with the mice. I know there are millions and millions of mice on the planet, but they're in a mess. Mavis, would you become a mouse? Become a mouse so that you can help them? How does that sound? No. And it's just, that's just a kind of a comical little way of understanding what's involved. And here's the thing, it's a one-way trip. God became and entered humanity. It wasn't just sort of like a 33-year stint. Oh, we'll just go there for a while and do what we can and then bail out. It's God saying, I love my creation. I love those in my image whom I've placed in that creation. I'm going to totally invest. Totally invest. There's a silly little joke that throws some light on this. The chicken and the pig who go into business. Do you know this one? The chicken and the pig go into business, and their business is bacon and egg pies. The chicken makes an investment, eggs. The pig, a commitment. Christmas is God's commitment. He's in. Our language stretches to try and understand this and grasp it. But there's something often at work to stop us understanding this, to stop us receiving it. And it works like this. When we hear something, we slot it into our understanding. It's the only way we know how to operate. We slot it into our understanding. We frame it. John says, the Word became flesh. What makes God to be God entered into humanity. And that really is hard to understand. That is hard to grasp. So we frame it. We frame it, and then we lose it. There's a story, a very important story in the Gospels, about Jesus taking his friends, Peter, James, and John, up a mountain. Transfiguration, where the glory of Jesus is revealed. And you know how Peter responds to this. He sees Jesus with Moses and Elijah, and he says, you know what we'll do? We'll build three little huts now, and we'll have these little huts here, and people can come up and visit these huts, and you can sit there, and you know, we'll have a place of pilgrimage. He takes what God reveals and he frames it into something that he can do, he can understand. And the cloud of God comes over the mountain, and Peter decides the best place is with his face on the ground. Sometimes God comes in ways like that. The best place is just flat on the ground. And God just says one thing to him. This is my son in whom I'm pleased. Listen to him. Listen to him. And the problem with us framing God and Jesus is we stop listening to him. I was at a church party a few weeks ago, a week or two ago, and someone said to me in passing, Christmas is coming. Well, it's all about the cross. And I thought, what? It's all about the cross. And it told me they didn't get it. It's a sort of line of thinking, Jesus was born so he could go to the cross. Jesus was now framed in the cross. Now, a cross is not a bad thing. But it's a doctrine. It's an understanding. And Jesus gets framed in it. And we don't hear him anymore. He becomes the one on the cross. It's just a subtle example. We don't listen. And what I want to set us up for is reading Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John to simply listen to Jesus, to take up that command, that advice that the Father gave, listen to him, and hear him without framework, without packaging him in such a way that we lose what he's saying. It's pretty obvious that Christmas in New Zealand today has packaged Jesus in such a way that he's squeezed out. Bless you for being here this morning. But out there, Jesus is a spare part in Christmas. The framework has got bigger and bigger and bigger and louder and louder and louder. That a messy baby and a teenage mother and a confused dad have no place in the situation. We really need to be to practice listening. We need to listen better. You know, in the 1930s, nobody listened, very few people listened to Adolf Hitler. The one who did was Winston Churchill. He listened and he got the message. Today, nobody actually listens to Hamas. They publish very clearly what they're about. Just read their stuff. Listen. People come to these awkward revelations with notions of, well, it's just people's stuff and it'll wipe over and you can negotiate and deal with these people. But with Jesus, we need to listen. Because he will say things, we will hear him say things that cut right across our expectations. The word becomes flesh and dwells among us. So to wrap it up, God invested himself in humanity to become part of our journey, part of our existence in a redeeming, rescuing way. And he speaks in that and to that. And his words have been recorded. Some of us have Bibles of red letter editions. The words of Jesus are actually in red. They stand out. And we, particularly we, the church, the Christians, we need to hear those words. Those words. Not the doctrines and the traditions and the everything that's been made of it in 1900 years. All the culture that's been worked around it. go right back and just hear the words of Jesus. And when he says something that's confusing, rejoice, because it's bumping into what we think is normal. So when he said things like, love your enemies, that's not normal. But that's what happens when God becomes human. When he says things or tells stories that encourage us to love people who aren't of our own tribe, the Good Samaritan. It's not normal. No one else teaches that. But when God becomes human, that's what he says. So, my encouragement. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Listen to him. Listen to him. Even if it means a lot of what we think is normal, a lot of what we even think is Christianity, is bumped and challenged and knocked.